Father's Day is a big mystery to my family. I've been in radio and television so long, my kids don't call me Dad. They think of me as their sponsor.
Catapult the propaganda.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert, and for Sharon Gilbert, we are proud to present a special broadcast of Peering into Darkness this afternoon. We wish you, if you are as blessed as I, as a father, I wish you a happy Father's Day, and we thank you for listening this afternoon. Our guest is one we've had in the recent past and one who always brings a lot of information to the table that you just don't hear anywhere else. Captain Eric May, the commanding officer of Ghost Troop, a cyber intelligence unit. Welcome back to PID Radio.
Well, GT Derek, it's always a great pleasure to be back with you and have a chance to talk to your audience about the important things going on and yet to come.
And a happy Father's Day to you, sir. I appreciate you taking time out on this Sunday to join us.
Well, thank you kindly. You know, since you're part of Ghost Troop itself, you know that we have about 175 active Ghost Troops and then probably about another 150 in reserve. So in traditional Army parlance, I'm as the captain in charge of the unit. I'm referred to as the old man. The first sergeants are called the first shirt and top, and the captain gets to be called the old man. So I guess that means I have 325 unruly children and Ghost Troop. The problem is I'm probably the most unruly child of them all. But that's where we get our character as the black sheep squadron of the Info War.
There you go. Well, as we record this on the 18th of June, 2006, you made the comment before we began the broadcast here that what we appear to be looking at is the first day of the summer terror season of 2006.
I think unquestionably, yeah.
Can you expand on that? I know we got some things coming up this week of interest. Are you referring to the federal government's continuity of government drill where everybody's heading off to the bunker this coming week?
Yes, I am. And, before we even start talking about the drills, I ought to give a nickel's worth of my background to your audience who may not have heard that part. My military career started in 77. I enlisted into the Chemical Corps. Nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare was my specialty then. Afterwards became military intelligence after college days. But wound up at an exercise unit, the 75th Division out of Houston. And we specifically worked exactly the kind of thing they're doing. They're doing a 4,000-member continuity of government CPX, or command post exercise. They're going to go through a rehearsal for, in fact, they've been quoted as saying, something bigger than 9/11. That's what they're rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing the kind of rehearsals that really may have made sense during times when we thought there were going to be intercontinental ballistic exchanges. But now the fact that that drill is coming tomorrow means that in our way of looking at it, the federal government is making sure it has its act totally together. They've learned how to put their guard up so that they can be ready for whatever. Now, to hear them say it, what they're getting ready for is, again, they say, another 9/11. If you want to hear us say it, yep, that's exactly what we think they're getting ready for, another 9/11. It just comes down to we don't think another 9/11 might be inflicted from abroad. We think another 9/11 is being planned from within. And we code that, of course, 9/11-2B, or the 9/11 which is to be. The one they keep telling us in the media is not a matter of if, but of when.
Mm-hmm.
So summer terror season begins after they've had their final rehearsal. And their final rehearsal is tomorrow, 619. Incidentally, we have to remember that this exercise, this kind of bunker drill, where everybody's sequestered away and unreachable, is exactly the kind of thing they were doing under the exercise title Vigilant Guardian on September 11th, 2001. So maybe they were getting ready for a September 11th on September 11th, too.
Interesting. That's always significant. You look for patterns in history and then try to use that information to project what's going to happen in the future. There was also a drill taking place in London on 7/7, and so we've got a drill beginning tomorrow, which would be the 18th of June, in which 4,000 government employees...
The 19th of June, excuse me.
You're right. 4,000 employees in Washington, D.C. of the federal government representing 50 different federal agencies will leave their families, drive off, and head into the Federal Relocation Arc, which is a group of bunkers arranged in a ring, underground bunkers designed to preserve the critical infrastructure of this nation in the event of a national catastrophe. This is the largest test of its kind since the 1950s. There was one other test, one other drill where they actually put 6,000 people in underground bunkers. It is now. What is it about this drill, Captain, that leads you to believe that it's either a test for something or may actually be the precursor to something big happening?
Well, okay. A lot of times, I'm going to wax Socratic here. You know, Socrates a lot of times will describe things in terms of sports or whatnot. Let's describe them in terms of sizing. I teach a little bit of Taekwondo. I'm a low end, a second Dan black belt. If anybody out there studies. You teach everybody how to put their guard up. The first thing you learn when you learn how to fight is to put your guard up so you don't get hit, right?
Right.
Okay, man, that's a bunker drill. A bunker drill means we're going to protect headquarters. Now, in a fighter, headquarters is your skull. For an administrative unit like the federal government, it means the top people, the heads of the department, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for a fighter, what you'd say is, it's time to do our protection drill, and you'd show someone how to cover their face, how to protect themselves against being struck, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a government, you take them all into a sequestered area where they can't possibly be interrupted or bothered. Same defensive maneuver, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, that very move might well be, you may say you're practicing that move because you don't want to get hit, but it's a great move to use right before you're going to mug somebody, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing about a defensive drill that makes it inherently defensive. Defense is always part of what you do if you're going on offense.
Okay.
You always do offense and defense at the same time. That's war. That's fighting. That's whatever. So what they're doing is putting a guard up. The question for us as the American people is, why in the world are you putting the guard up? You know, why do you have to defend yourself so thoroughly right now? And the answer may well be because, certainly it is, because we're planning to do something else to the American people, and we want to be defended against them in that event. You understand, this exercise in defense is kind of like the guy on the street who comes up to you with his hands up in a boxing position, and he walks right up to you and says, hey, man, don't worry, I'm being defensive. But he's walking up to you and he's got his fist balled up around his chin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does it look like to you? You better grab your wallet and start running, right?
Yeah.
Well, these are hostile, predatory acts, and they are exactly the kind of things that tyrants always do. This is saber rattling. Remember, this is an executive branch that has already committed high treason against its people. It committed and controlled the 9-1-1 exercises in very much the same kind of circumstances they're rehearsing now, by the way. This is at least their way of sending out a message that they are prepared to do it again. I'm not talking about what you're going to hear on TV. I'm talking about what smart people can figure out by reading between the lines. And it is certainly an opportunity to do just another thing like 9-1-1 again. After all, as I said, this is exactly what they were doing on 9-1-1. That way, if there's any kind of pesky trouble, if anybody starts getting loyal, if somebody brings a company of Marines down to arrest the people who are running the exercise, what do you have? Just what you were talking about. An exercise designed to prove that nothing on earth can interrupt continuity of government. So when you have treasonous or tyrannical government, what they're saying is we can do what we want and you can't touch us. Now, whether that means tomorrow or whether or not that means next week or whether or not that means a month from now or whether or not that means a week or a month before the elections, I can't say. But we have to take this whole period. This comes back to the point of why it's summer terror season. Really, Bush has a window starting tomorrow when he rehearses his mugging, right? He's going to rehearse his mugging drill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cover yourself up so you can hurt people and not get punished for it. And in fall, there's going to be an election in the first week of November.
Mm-hmm.
So between June 19th, 619, and then, you know, the first week of November, Bush really needs something, desperately, by the way. You know, this Republican right, and I call it that, being a former republic. Look, I was a great Republican until it became a monarchy with Bush going to Bush as president to president.
Mm-hmm.
But this Republican Reich now is very much in the same kind of position the German Reich was in around 44. They need a wonder weapon. They need a miracle event. The only person who can save Bush right now is Bin Laden.
So you look for something to happen, if not this week, then sometime in the near future, with this being a drill for the government to how to respond in order to protect key personnel.
Right. It's we're going to do what we want, you can't hurt us drill. They're trying to make sure they have all of their preparation. And, yeah, I expect sometime in the summer, and I expect sooner than later. I think right now, we have to understand that the whole Al-Qaeda thing, you know, I suspect I'm talking to a sympathetic audience, but for those who may be hearing us or me at least for the first time, man, Al-Qaeda is a soap opera. The whole global war on terror is a soap opera. This is a script being written by people who have backgrounds kind of like mine, intelligence, you know, upper-level command groups. They're doing an exercise. This is nothing but an exercise that's being run, where Al-Qaeda is what we used to call in exercise terms the Op 4, or the opposing forces. Now, look, I used to play Op 4. There were times when I was going in with, I think I went in one time with Russian airborne captain rank on, Yahetel Gabrit Paruski. You know, I was going in talking Russian, everything else. I was not Russian. I had not become a traitor. I had not betrayed my country. That was simply the exercise scenario, and I was the Op 4. Mm-hmm. All I'm stating is that everything that's done with Al-Qaeda is done with Al-Qaeda the same way it was done with the Op 4 group when I ran exercises for 5 years of my career. So what we're seeing is a rewriting of the exercise scenario, and the exercise scenario has been rewritten quite specifically in the last 2-3 weeks since the Canadian, of course that was a fiasco, that was bogus, but since the Bush folks put enough heat on the Canadian folks to come up with a little bit of an Al-Qaeda in Canada story, and I think that was the 13th? No, May. When was that?
I would have to go back.
June 4th. June 4th.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is something I wanted to get into, that and also the Al-Zarqawi story. But let's start with Canada. How do you interpret the arrest of the 17 young men in Toronto?
Oh, I think it's strictly a matter of Bush putting enough geopolitical pressure on Canada. Remember, Canada, they say the dilemma of Canada is it's like sharing a bed with an elephant. If America rolls over, we crush Canada. That's the way America feels anyway. It's certainly the way Bush feels. And I think that there's been enough pressure on Canada that Bush League operatives have probably managed to get certain people within the Canadian government to accede to, or at least close their eye to, a disinformation campaign. I don't believe a bit of this. I mean, this Canadian kind of thing is absurd. It's, nothing about it seems real to me. It seems like a totally contrived story, strictly set up, I think, two purposes. One, so that globalism can increase its power in Canada, so that you're going to have more of the emergence of a police-controlled fascist state in Canada, possibly as a result of this. I've already received some indicators from some of our ghost troops that there have been some legal and administrative changes tightening things up, as they would say it, imposing an Orwellian society, as we would say it. But the bigger purpose, I don't think, isn't to control Canada. The bigger purpose is to rewrite the whole nature of Al-Qaeda so that it can be reintroduced into America for the follow-up attack, what we call the 911 2B attack.
In other
so
words,
Canada was only brought in to set up America.
In other words, to sell Americans on the idea that we've got these homegrown Al-Qaeda cells right here in North America and right possibly down the street from you, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America.
Oh, of course. And by the way, before we go any further, apologies to Canadians for talking about how the Canadians are just there to set up a scenario for the Americans. Of course, they're Americans, too. They're North Americans, too. But the scenario up there is being used to sell the U.S., which is why it's inevitable that we should go immediately from Canada to Zarqawi. But there's a stop-off. The day after Canada happened, that was 6-4. 4th of June. That was 2 weeks ago, as a matter of fact. The day after that happened, on 6-5, the FBI, no, it's 6-6. In fact, it was 6-6-6, June 6th. FBI and CIA and CBS, hard to get the difference between CBS and CIA sometimes, FBI and CBS issued a joint story on the 6th of June saying that top officials in the U.S. Intelligence and terror apparatus thought it was inevitable that there would be an attack by the end of the year, that it would be small, homegrown terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Now we have that word coming up 2 days in a row, right? Homegrown.
Right.
That was the 5th and 6th of June. The next day, the 7th, wow, surprise, surprise, Zarqawi is dead. Now, that gives Bush a chance to get the Hadiza thing and other bad things behind him for a little while and fly off to Baghdad. That's a farce, but we won't go into that too much. The deal was that it also gave Bush the chance to focus on Zarqawi as the mastermind of a new version of Al-Qaeda. In fact, Wolf Blitzer, who's very much in the thick of all this, a CNN anchor, said that this is Al-Qaeda 2.0, new version of Al-Qaeda. Zarqawi was the head of this 2.0, and 2.0 Al-Qaeda was going to specialize in, guess what buzzword, what kind of terrorism?
Homegrown
terrorism. Roger. So now what we have, we call this in Ghost Troop, every time you get something that's a coincidence, such as homegrown terror coming up the 4th of June in Canada, and then homegrown terror being promised as the future mechanism of an attack within the next year by the CBS and the FBI 2 days later, and then homegrown terror being talked about by ultra-Zionist Wolf Blitzer a day later on CNN. These are called cascading indicators, folks. When you get one person after another suddenly introducing this phrase, you've got to realize this phrase didn't suddenly slip out of somebody's mouth at a cocktail party and just get picked up. It's not even that clever a phrase. It's simply the phrase that everybody's going to go with. It is the new storyline. It is the new, as I said earlier, exercise scenario. It is the new redefining of Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda 2.0. You see, they do nothing but go through. All we do in Ghost Troop is we sum up what they're doing in the news cycle. We don't have to reach far for our intelligence. We watch TV. They tell us.
Hidden in plain sight.
We just watch his enemies. As a matter of fact, I have a rule for your friends out there who may want to understand, well, God, how do you do that, Captain? You know, how can you watch them like that? First off, one of my editors at the Wall Street Journal, I used to write essays, cultural essays for the Wall Street Journal back when I was ghostwriting. One of my editors, Barbara Phillips, was nothing but a TV critic. And she was the first person who ever told me how to watch TV critically. And I've learned a rule that works for us in the InfoWar. Anytime I watch TV journalism, if you want to call it that, and if any of you want to watch it, please follow this rule. Never smile at them. That's an important thing. The reason the person you like to watch is on TV is because you like to watch them. That person is nothing but a professional rhetorician, call them a liar and you'll be closer, who is put there because they have, you know, right age, right demographic, right tone of voice, the ability to fake sincerity. As some of my journalism friends have told me in the past, when you can fake sincerity, you're really a professional.
That's it.
These are professional fakers. So when we look at them, when I look at them, I tell people I never smile. If I find myself about to smile, I suppress it. Because you need to look at them as enemies. You must look at them inimically. You must understand the patterns behind what they're saying, not be amused by how they say things in the moment. So we've seen this shift to homegrown terror all across the media, and then Thursday there was a debate in the Congress about an Iraq war resolution. You probably heard about it.
Yes.
One Republican, the Republicans basically are simply redefining their position vis-a-vis Iraq, which is to say that Iraq is part of the global war on terror. That was the whole thrust of this amendment, or rather this proclamation, what's the word, resolution.
Resolution.
But the thing that was significant to me was that about every other Republican who came up there was quoting guess what kind of terror as being the new threat. So, again, these cascading indicators become a torrent of indicators and eventually a tsunami of indicators. So there is a tsunami of indicators, folks, and all those indicators say that the Bush regime, which needs to have another 9-1-1 event, 9-1-1-2B event, is right now continuing to set one up. And has probably gone away from the large-scale terror events that G.T. Derrick, we saw in Chicago with the Chicago 9/11 exercises of May 2nd through 4th, mm-hmm. or then in Texas City where nuclear forces mysteriously appeared on January 31st, according to our prediction. Well, instead of doing a cataclysmic multiple 911, several 911s worth of casualties, which is what they seem to have been doing, mm-hmm. now we seem to have had a radical alteration in the script scenario, in the script, scripture, in the script rather. And the script is for a smaller, lighter, localized Al-Qaeda to carry out slightly less lethal operations. In fact, they've already given us something to work with it. They said that they found three times the amount of fertilizer bomb used in Oklahoma City up in Canada.
Right. That was the display that was put on by the law enforcement officers at their press conference after arresting those 17 young men. I found it interesting. Yes, I found it interesting that the bag of fertilizer that was displayed was for display purposes only, was not actually part of the load that that had been intercepted, according to police.
All these things break down if you start looking at them seriously. Yeah, that was a bogus photo. That's why you don't think of Zarqawi. Look, man, getting back to Zarqawi, no one called Zarqawi died, folks. This was, Zarqawi is like Bin Laden, and Bin Laden is like the Lone Ranger, and the Lone Ranger is like Santa Claus. If you still believe in Santa Claus, if you still believe in Lone Ranger, then go ahead and believe in Zarqawi and Bin Laden. If you figured out Santa Claus and the Lone Ranger, don't worry your head too much about what you see on TV when you see a picture of Bin Laden or Zarqawi. But even the media stooges who are trying to shovel out this horse crap and caught Shinola, even they were badgering the military the day after this happened, trying to ask, you know, little things like, how is it we have such a remarkably preserved photo of Zarqawi when he was inside a building, you know, maybe he was in the bathroom when a 500-pound bomb went off?
Yeah.
Man, that's Hamburger Hill time. That's not time to find somebody with a little bit of blood fleck on him and a pretty good photo shot.
Well, exactly.
You know
the building was reduced to a crater and basically pulverized, and yet he was basically in the same number of pieces that he had going in.
You know, this is so much a proof of what Mama told us. It shouldn't be just, well, I guess we'll make it what Dad told us since it's Father's Day. You remember your dad said, son, I don't want you to lie, and there are a lot of reasons. But maybe the biggest one is because once you tell one lie, you have to tell another lie. And then another lie, another lie. And pretty soon all you're doing is telling lies. And then your story's going to break down. You're going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what's happening with InfoWar. Every time they try to come up with some kind of crapola story, it gets cut to pieces. So we've got a story where a 500-pound bomb is flying in, and we're seeing one film after another of a building exploding, oh, I don't know, about 100 yards every direction down the streets. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like it vaporizes and makes a huge plus sign where it can go down the avenues and doesn't get blocked by the other buildings. Okay, so we got that great Photoshop to sell this story. And then we've got a dead or alive thing where we've got the bad guy shot down and we get to see his dead body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right out of a Western movie. No class, it's sheer propaganda. But then how do you reconcile the two? We've got a building that goes, you know, that looks like it got hit by a, well, by a 500-pound bomb. And we've got a guy who looks like maybe he fell down a flight of steps and died from a ruptured liver because he doesn't even have a broken face. Okay, man, it doesn't work for me.
No,
that's like saying you got in a fight with a gorilla and that's how you got your hair messed up. No, you don't fight gorillas and just get your hair messed up. Get your backbone messed up. That's realistic. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly. It doesn't pass the smell test.
Well, that's the problem. Please understand. Remember, after 9-1-1, and look, folks, I was still on cruise control. I believed everything they said about 9-11. Heck, I volunteered to go back active a year later because I thought it was sending against the great onslaught. I bought all the stuff. I mean, you know, I wasn't really politically plugged in then. But eventually the 911 research community caught on to 911. What's happened now is a nightmare for the people who did 911, which is the research community is getting to the point that it doesn't have to wait for something to have happened to figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going to the point that it's becoming a collective intelligence entity. It is becoming a collective entity of intelligence in every respect. Common human intelligence, the intelligence of asking frank questions, as we do here, and intelligence in the very professional sense, where there are people like, I wasn't the best guy in my field in the world, but I was a real Fort Huachuca-trained military intelligence officer, and there are, you know, many such right now working in the Internet. And collectively, what we're doing is we're becoming more and more credible to more and more people. And the people who seem to relish being in the role of saying that anybody who predicts, there's a whole realm of alternative media figures especially who seem to make a career off talking about how Bush did 911, but seem to think their career depends on not mentioning the idea that maybe he needs to do another one.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who says Bush did the last one, who isn't talking about whether or not Bush is about to do the next one, in my mind, must be working at some level for Bush. Please, just understand another term. I come over and I shoot your dog with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you're crazy to bring me over to babysit. I mean, a guy who will shoot your dog may shoot your kid, right? I mean, it's that basic.
Exactly.
It's called modus operandi, man. So why is it people are talking about how Bush already did it, but the same people are out there, you know, for a good while, the very same people were making sure that they didn't imply that Bush might do it again. Now I think the only credible position has become, yes, Bush both did it and must do it again.
Our guest is Captain Eric May. I'm sorry, Captain, didn't mean to jump in there. Just wanted to remind folks that Captain Eric May and the commanding officer of Ghost Troop is Cyber Intelligence Unit. And as we look forward, are there certain key dates? I wanted to touch on this as far as moving forward with the information that's been collected now to this point. Are there key dates that you're looking forward? I mean, does the summer solstice have any special significance, do you think? Or are there other dates as we look further ahead that you consider more significant?
Well, when we're going to talk about dates, there are two ways to cue off of them. First, we have to take political and military political reality as we understand it, and then we have to take numerics. Let's go ahead and do the easy part first. If we have 619, we're having a bunker drill.
Right.
That's an obvious date just because of its military significance for a sneak attack by the government on the people. They prepare themselves for any eventuality, including a people trying to stop itself from being attacked. So there's an obvious date. There are other dates that we are very concerned about. Two of them I can mention right offhand. The first one is July 1st. July 1st concerns us because it is the day that the next shuttle launch is going to be on. That I think will be the Discovery again. Last year, many of your listeners will have heard that there was great talk last summer, not about homegrown downsized terror, but about how Al-Qaeda was going to blow up a port city with a nuke. Do you remember that story all last summer?
Yes.
Well, that turned into the Texas City mission, what we call Mission 911-2B. It was the first of the 911-2B sequence. And we predicted on July 1st last year that there would be an attempt on July 27th to blow up Texas City. Or we actually said Houston Port Petro facility, which was 25 miles away from Texas City. Texas City is a small petroleum town. Houston's a big petroleum town. We predicted that on July 1st. By July 7th, the London attacks had happened.
Mm-hmm.
By July 8th, FBI Houston was in touch with me trying to shut me down from doing any more analysis. By July 11th, I had myself baptized under emergency provision because I thought I was going to get killed for what I was going to do next, which was to lead Ghost Troop and Mission 911-2B starting July 20th. When we started Mission 911-2B July 20th, having predicted for, at that point, 3 weeks that 727 was the magic date, we didn't know that on 726 was the Discovery launch, the space shuttle Discovery.
Okay.
What we discovered in the mission sequence 911-2B with the date, prediction date July 27th was that the shuttle launch allowed them to pull media to the Houston metro area, along with government agencies of all sorts, along with agents and military people of all descriptions. Now, it allowed them to put down exceptional information controls, protocols. It allowed them to basically take over this region because of the national security ramifications of the space shuttle launch, right?
Okay.
Well, that was the perfect setup. On the 26th, they set up the space shuttle. The 27th, we thought they were going to hit Houston. We were utterly wrong. It was the next day. We were off 24 hours. Instead, they hit Texas City. So we were off 24 hours and 24 miles on a national prediction that we had made 1 month in advance of the date. And they did. They blew up British Petroleum, Texas City. No casualties. But that night, and it's a historic interview, I did it with Cloak and Dagger out of Canada, they set off a HAARP weapon over the ship, the Gulf of Mexico, south of Texas City, apparently. But the enemy out of it was that the last serious attempt to set up, the serious attempt of July 28, 2005, in which the British Petroleum facility in Texas City was targeted, and in which a freak, probably HAARP weapon, was set off over the skies south of Texas City, viewable for 100 miles in every direction around. All of that was keyed into the space shuttle launch, because the space shuttle launch gave them the opportunity to move assets forward to Houston to control the attack.
What was the purpose? What was the purpose of the HAARP weapon, and how did that manifest itself?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. You know, I'll talk about it, but I'm almost going to have to say you ought to make sure you put that link on so anybody who hears this can get hold of it.
I will put that in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah, if you would just put that link down there, because it's kind of like our version of the Hindenburg crash, folks. It's the closest Ghost Troop came to out-and-out combat. G.T. Derrick has heard it. We were, during this exercise of July 27th, 28th, 2005, we had Ghost Troops on the East Coast, including the Charleston area, where, you know, they do a lot of their training for simulated nuke stuff. Mm-hmm. We had ghost troops engaged in confrontations with the Secret Service, with the FBI, with various police agencies. But at the same time, we had police agencies, military people, and media people working with us. We became a one-unit civil war, so to speak, where everybody who was working for the big bucks to supposedly enforce the federal government, basically the executive branch, everybody was trying to shut us up so we couldn't get in the way of what was coming down. And everybody who knew what we were doing who wasn't under the thumb of the executive branch was either trying to help us or wish us well. What actually went down on the 28th was at about 6 p.m., maybe 5 p.m., the British Petroleum refinery went up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since we've been expecting a refinery attack somewhere in the Houston metro area, when that happened, we immediately went on radio with Cloak and Dagger, and we started doing an interview. We knew that since they had blown the factory early, our suspicion was that that was an abort code. In other words, instead of having the major explosion that they had planned originally in this exercise that was going to go live, what they did is they went with some small act of sabotage. That way the exercise continued through. You know, they played the exercise out. So we were on the phone doing this at about 6 p.m. About 3 hours later, this being 9 p.m., and this is significant, the sun had gone down, and I hear that that's relevant. 3 hours later, all the people in Texas City had been told to shelter in place, that there is a gas leak, which turned out not to be the case, and they were all told to go into their houses, kind of like a big old duck and tuck drill for your readers or listeners who are old enough to remember the old nuclear drill.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all in their houses trying not to breathe in bad air, right? At that point, an eruption of fire to my south, and I used to be in the chemical corps. I used to teach the nuclear biological and chemical warfare defense course. So I know what I saw. I know how to describe what I saw. I was 50 miles north of Texas City, and I saw a cloud. It looked for all the world like Vesuvius. It didn't look like a perfect nuke. It looked like an eruption of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But the eruption of energy was so large that from my distance of 50 miles, 45 miles actually, I saw the eruption of energy, if you want to call it the cloud or the fireball, up at a height of 45 degrees. That means pretend like you're pointing up like, you know, a big high salute, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 45 degrees. That happens to be the height at which something is just as, if something is 10 feet away from you and you see it at 45 degrees, that means it's 10 feet tall. It's a little trick of trigonometry that we learned. That means from 45 miles, it was 45 degrees high. That means the cloud top was 45 miles up in the air. The width was twice as wide as that. So these are principles for any of you professional military. These are called the premises of the NBC, or Nuclear Biological and Chemical Warfare 1 report. This is an NBC 1 report I did live on air describing a 45-50 mile high cloud about 100 miles wide. What we suspect at this point is that the people of Texas City were going to be, probably the whole thing was set up for the people of Texas City to be set up with an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be a nuclear explosion. So what we were going to see, the thing we saw from Houston that terrified this whole city, but never, by the way, got covered on any of the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, mm-hmm. My criminal intelligence division friends at the Houston Police Department, Sergeant John Karshner foremost, and I were speaking about this as something that looked like a simulated nuke. In other words, the top people in charge of protecting this city were talking about a simulated nuke. But no media within 100 miles of here touched the story. What we think was going to happen was that they were going to top Texas City with a 10-kiloton bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That means about a half a Hiroshima bomb to you folks out there. And that's a relatively small bomb. You certainly wouldn't see it from 50 miles away, and it wouldn't be spectacular. So what we think we saw was we saw, in effect, the pyrotechnic accompaniment to a nuclear terror act. We saw something that was, believe me, it would have taken a 100-megaton bomb to have made the explosion we saw. It was a simulation. It was a HAARP energy weapon in the upper atmosphere,
and
probably up to Gulf.
What was the data that
it was there to make everybody think that was the nuke that hit Texas City? Just like the towers can't come down according to any physics book. You couldn't set it up in a physics experiment, but you could set it up as a magic trick. These terror attacks don't work as physics experiments. They work as magic tricks. So the fireball we sell, anybody who understood the principles of nuclear weapons would understand that you can't have a 100-megaton fireball from a 10-kiloton bomb. But how many people really understand the principles of nuclear weapons?
Not too many.
Well, you've heard the interview, by the way, the tape, and I think, G.C. Derrick, you've actually heard, as I was giving a live broadcast running down the description of an ongoing terror act aimed at Texas City in the Houston metro area on the Gulf Coast on July 28, 2005. As I'm making this rather urgent, emphatic, and alarmed report, there are helicopters circling my position, man.
Now, about what time? Now, about what time was this on the 28th of July, 05?
About 9 p.m. And this is, the explosions lasted from about 9 to 10. If you want to know how real it was, my wife and I were saying the Lord's Prayer because we were waiting for the blast wave.
It's very interesting because while we're talking about this, I'm looking up a log of that a fellow up in Alaska keeps of the use of the HAARP device up there in Alaska, which incidentally just went online at full power here just a few weeks back. And it was, in fact, used on the night of 7:28 of 05.
Well, the time there would have probably been about 4 or 5 p.m.
He's got it a little later in the evening. His recorder indicated that it was used a little later in the evening at about 11:45 p.m. Pacific time. So I don't know that, but how we need to remember that the HAARP device is not the only device of this type that exists in the world.
Well, in the interview that I was doing with Lenny Bloom, you'll actually hear Lenny asking, do you think the shuttle has anything to do with it? Because remember, the shuttle had been up in the air for 2 days at this point. And my answer to Lenny was, I didn't know. At the time, if you listen to the recording, and please do, GT Derek, please link that so they can get it. The 9112B report is critical, folks, because GT Derek, I say GT, that means ghost truth, y'all. GT Derek is asking what significant dates are, and that led me to the statement July 1st was significant because it represented the next NASA shuttle launch.
Right.
So
right.
The whole 9112B mission from July 26th last year when the shuttle launch went up, to July 28th, when this event that we're talking about, probably this HAARP attack, happened, all of that is surrounding a NASA-centered incident. NASA was the key piece in setting up that false flag terror. And let's not be naive. Everything that works for Bush, look, man, if Bush is the traitor, if Bush is a terrorist, if the reality of this is Bush Laden, not Bin Laden, which, of course, is the reality, if that's the case, how on earth can we think that NASA wouldn't be part of it? Every part of the executive apparatus of state is under orders to answer to the commander. There are whole echelons of goons and, you know, spies. There are principles like OPSEC, top secret. You know, there are 1,000 words and 1,000 people who are scary to keep regular folks from asking questions when they're told to go along with the executive branch. That's how it works. So when we see that NASA is going to do something, let's say, on July 1st, that means Bush told him to do it on July 1st, or someone working for Bush did. There are two launches during the summer, and both of them scare me quite badly. The first is July 1st, and the last one is August 28th. August 28th being 8/28. So those are two specific NASA windows that they have created for themselves if they want to assemble things in Houston. GT Derek, you know that we've been working here with Ghost Troops. For about the last month on different terror threats to oil refineries in the Houston metro or the southeast Texas area.
Mm-hmm.
We know that right now there's a terror threat now 3 weeks old against ExxonMobil Beaumont, which
Correct.
We researched, and I think you've done some independent research on that.
Correct, yeah.
That's a story that had it not been for Ghost Truth and maybe a couple of other researchers looking into, never would have been told to the public. But that story involved exactly what we're hearing about now from the Canadian scenario, a kind of homegrown terror threat against ExxonMobil. 1 week ago, we had a terror threat against British Petroleum Texas City again. Not a word of that in the media. We got that from inside sources. Ghost Troop actually infiltrated British Petroleum. We have people in British Petroleum who are much more worried about what we say than what their bosses say. They know who to listen to get real info, so we got that inside information. On June 1st, there were petroleum problems down in Corpus Christi. For those not familiar with geography, that means the curve in Texas on the Gulf Coast, all the way from the border of Louisiana down through the Houston area into Corpus Christi in the south, is really a whole zone. It's like a zone in which every petrochemical complex seems to be endangered, which, of course, is exactly the scenario we think they're setting up. They're trying to make this a small, localized, homegrown al-Qaeda thing because that means that instead of Bush having to set up some huge national thing to nuke a U.S. city, he can just turn it over to a regional operation, you know, whichever Bush League region seems to be doing best, he can turn it over to them and make it a more localized affair. Less command and control, less trouble, you know, fewer people to mess it up. They're working on a reduced scale scenario.
Our guest is Captain Eric May, the commanding officer of the Cyber Intelligence Unit Ghost Troop. And again, we'll note that you should check into the show notes that we will post at PIDradio.com after listening to this program, because I will put a link to the interview he's referred to and also to a couple of other articles that will pertain to the topics that we've discussed here. One of the other topics that we've discussed and that you've been passing along information to your Ghost Troop unit pertains to weather wars, and we've just entered hurricane season, of course. We had Tropical Storm Alberto that popped up out of nowhere, thankfully didn't cause the damage that it appeared that it might. But one of the big concerns last summer and fall was the destruction that a direct hit on Houston or the other petrochemical areas along the Texas coast might cause, similar to the damage, of course, that was caused further up the coast in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Do you think that there might be an incident of that type using some sort of scalar weapon to take out the refining capacity of the United States, which we almost saw last year, sometime in 2006?
Yeah, to answer that directly and bluntly, I think it's inevitable. I think there will be numerous weather warfare attacks this year. Again, I think you linked to our home page. Folks, we didn't become converts to weather warfare, which means the application of this Harper scalar energy to creating thermal patterns larger that can be used to direct particularly ocean events. We didn't become converts to this by reading about it in comic books or on the Internet. We became converts to this because Houston is the next city over to Louisiana for Katrina. When Katrina happened, I was at Camp Casey Crawford. I was up there with Cindy Sheehan and that crowd from early August. And when we came back, it was so apparent to me and other Ghost Troop officers, you know, many of us from military background, and all the chief officers are, it was so apparent to us that what had happened in New Orleans was a war, that what was going on against New Orleans, everything from the levees blowing, the storm hitting, the inability to get supplies to them, all that, we came to realize so quickly that New Orleans had been set up. The screaming indicator there, by the way, was that the first couple, 3 days, you notice that basically they blamed it all on the black folks.
Mm-hmm.
The first 2 or 3 days of New Orleans, the media engaged in the operation of making sure that everybody knew that it was these wild black folks. It was their fault they were dying. That's exactly how it was presented. And then it kind of modified out. We call that Operation Bono, folks, for Battle of New Orleans. And it was, and before that began, you could have sat there and talked to me for 5 hours about weather warfare, and I would have fallen asleep. After that happened, you couldn't have talked 5 hours and convinced me it wasn't real. So by the time the next one came, the next one was Rita. Remember, Category 5 storms. Katrina started 100 miles off the coast of Florida, y'all. Now, Florida is where Brother Jeb runs things, and we suspect that's why they generate all this stuff off of Florida. Remember, Florida had the sequence testing in 2004. Let's say you're going to use a super weapon that you just invented, something like the Manhattan Project, right? No one believed there was a nuke before a nuke was used. So let's say you've invented a super weather weapon. The four applications of it in 2004 were the four freak hurricanes that hit Florida. Remember, about every 2 weeks, a new Florida hurricane?
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones in 2004 that were going out in the Atlantic, like Ivan and turning loop-de-loops and coming back?
Right.
They were doing things that were impossible?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's somebody testing out a new weapon, y'all. We call those the four Florida hurricanes of 2004, four in 2004, and believe that was a weather weapon sequence. We believe the real application of it came with the generation of a Category 5 off the coast of Florida, which, by the way, all the meteorological folks were saying was going to hit New Orleans 72 hours or more before it hit New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Amazing how suddenly they gave them the ability to do pinpoint prediction 3, 4, 5 days in advance.
Mm-hmm.
We figured that that was a Category 5 weather weapon, but just to prove it, we ran a test on Rita. All this is at our home site, reference for your notes. We ran Operation Rita, and Rita was the exact same thing. Another Category 5 storm generated right off the coast of Florida, and this time, a week in advance, they were saying it was going to hit, guess where?
Houston.
I made a statement to Lenny Bloom, running Cloak and Dagger in, magazine, and that's, you know, that we could, if we got enough attention on this, turn the hurricane. Now, folks, look, you can go look up the interviews through our home site. You can certainly look up our notes. They're really essential. We were able to detect thermal patterns in the water showing that they had heated up the ocean surface up to 10, 15 degrees above seasonal norms.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. That's impossible. These are physical anomalies. These are not anomalies. These are impossibilities. There are meteorological and oceanographical impossibilities going on left and right. And we saw them steering that hurricane dead towards Houston. And then 2 days before it hit Houston, it suddenly veered off and went towards Louisiana. And everybody who was a weatherman was shocked. They weren't shocked because hurricanes don't do that. Hurricanes do that all the time. They were shocked because they weren't doing hurricane predictions. They were reading scripts of what was already written. They all knew in this area. And I'll name them. People like Frank Billingsley, NBC, Neil Frank, CBS, in local time, Houston. These people knew doggone good and well that Rita was supposed to hit Houston. It was turned off at the last minute. Then there was another Category 5 storm started up, Wilma.
Mm-hmm.
Wilma, again, less than a month later, Wilma comes up Category 5, and it does things that have never been done before. It sits on top of Cancun for, what, 36 hours?
Something like that.
36 hours on top of the Yucatan Peninsula, and it gains strength. These are impossibilities, folks. These are categorical meteorological impossibilities.
In addition, there was all of the lightning generated by Katrina and Rita, and lightning is not a characteristic of hurricanes because lightning is generated by the static charge developed by vertical winds, like you get inside thunderstorms. Hurricanes are horizontal winds.
The in and the out of it was, yes, wonderful. You see, these are more and more indicators. And again, I recommend that everybody go see our Operation Bono, Battle of New Orleans about Katrina, and Operation Rita, those were simply our ongoing ghost troop exchanges and notes from last year. And we think we conclusively cracked the puzzle on this. We couldn't build you the machine that did it, and we can't explain all the physics, but we can explain enough of the physics to make it clear that it's inexplicable by anything except mechanical additions. There is nothing in the natural cycle that created what happened. So the in and the out of the – oh, by the way, one last thing. You notice that Katrina, the biggest problem Bush had last summer after the Texas City abort of July 28, 2005,
mm-hmm.
he went up to Crawford for a summer vacation and he was dying there. Cindy Sheehan went there and started laying siege to him. Ghost Troop joined a week later. We were part of what we called the Siege of Crawford,
mm-hmm.
where it was like Bush couldn't come out. King George was holed up, right? The thing that happened that ended Crawford more or less was Katrina. 1 month later, Cindy Sheehan was up in D.C. organizing the biggest anti-war protest in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what happened the same day Cindy Sheehan was protesting with 500,000 people in D.C.?
That was Rita.
Rita. Right. In other words, just to throw a couple more hints in there for the clever, these hurricanes can be turned on signal. So let's bring it out of 2005. 2004 again, four Florida hurricanes. That was a test sequence, making sure they got it right. 2005, three category hurricanes that defy all the rules of hurricanes. More category 5 hurricanes within 2 months in 2005 than in the previous century. That's all happened together.
If you had to make a guess as to where you thought things would hit this year, do you have any indications from what you're seeing in the media as to where they might be looking this year?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get there. But we're going to get to 2006. One thing I want to say before this, since we talk about InfoWar, folks, when we play the InfoWar model, when we try to understand the world, we ask that you forget what you see on TV and never smile at it again. Remember, I told you that. They're the enemy. Well, movies are just another branch of the TV, the media, corporations. There was a movie that actually prepared America for the devastating hurricane, the climatic weapons of 2004 and 5. Can you guess what the movie was? It was The Day After Tomorrow.
Right, okay.
And if you had to guess one guy's theater, or movie branch, that would make a right-wing kill America movie, how about Fox? And in the movie The Day After Tomorrow, the premise is that because of climate change, there are going to be 10 to 15 degree ocean temperature shifts, which are going to cause Arctic hurricanes that are going to hit the north, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how far do you really have to go from that to say they knew that there were mechanical things that were going to cause 10 to 15 degree changes, not lower, but higher in ocean currents, and that there were going to be superstorms, not hitting the north, but hitting the south of the United States?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't going to result in a massive flood tide going through New York City, killing everybody, but rather a massive flood tide going through New Orleans, killing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Where, coincidentally, they had been rehearsing the Katrina scenario as a hurricane. I forget the name of it. They'd been doing command post exercises for about the previous 2-3 years in New Orleans.
Mm.
Okay, it's all there, folks. In 2004, summer up, they bring out the movie Day After Tomorrow around, May, June,
mm-hmm.
and then by around August, September, they're running the test sequence in Florida for the four hurricanes. Then the next year, you have the fulfillment of the Day After Tomorrow in detail, with the small exception that everything they said was going to be a cold weather storm from the north turned out to be a cold weather storm from the south. And instead of blowing out New York City, it blew out New Orleans. In other words, Murdoch and Fox and all the people who wrote the script knew exactly what was coming. The movie was written to prepare the people for what was coming and to make the people suppose in advance that the storms were as a result of man's climate abuse, global conditions. You see, they rationalized the hurricane sequence in advance to the public with the movie The Day After Tomorrow.
And what we've been seeing since then is a rash of stories in places like, from sources like AccuWeather, NOAA, which is the National Weather Service, and channels that like the Weather Channel on TV, doing specials showing that New York or New England are ripe for a major hurricane strike.
Well, let's go ahead, and since you want to get to 2006. In fact, your listeners in New York will want to listen particularly carefully now. First off, anything that comes out of NOAA is just as bad as anything that comes out of the TV station. Think about it. If you're a Satanist, if you're a sicko, if you run little gangs at the public to show them that you're in control, even as you set them up for mass homicide, then you set up little word games. Like, who was it in the Bible who was promised there'd never be another flood?
Well, Noah.
Yeah. That's the weather research thing you just referred to?
Noah. Yeah.
So if you were going to use weather to destroy people and you were a little anti-Christ sicko, what would you just maybe call your weather agency that people were looking to get good answers and good information to save their lives?
Uh-huh.
Noah?
Sure.
You see what I'm saying? But what you're hearing this year, there are two zones that I consider to be of chief vulnerability to storms this year. Folks, this has nothing to do with anything you're going to see. I am not a meteorologist, although I used to be in charge of the weather report for my battalion because that's what poor battalion intelligence officers had to do. I am only a meteorologist by necessity and only in a very limited sense. At the moment, what I'm going to give you is not meteorology at all. It's military weaponry. I'm going to talk military science, and I'm going to tell you the two places Bush would like to hit. And let's just see if, coincidentally, we happen to get a superstorm to that. How's that, GT Derek?
Uh-huh.
First place, northeast United States, Pacific New York. Our premise is that every time a weather event destroys a city, that the people who were in the loop with Bush had time in advance to insure property they wanted to insure, to diversify or vary their investment portfolios so that they will be able to take that tragedy that happens to everybody else and turn it into sheer profit and gain for themselves. That would work if you knew your wife was going to break her leg tomorrow. You could insure her leg through London, Lloyd's of London. If you knew your house was going to break down, for heaven's sake, that's why they have investigations anytime there's an insurance claim, because it's so easy to make money on misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know now that they have been running simulations of a New York superstorm, and they've been setting up the story ever since probably spring this year,
mm-hmm.
of the New York superstorm of, what, 3 or 4 decades ago, a Category 3 that went into New York.
And then there was the Long Island Express of 1938 that hit a Category 3, but it was moving so quickly that the winds on the northeast quadrant were actually Category 5.
Well, what they're doing is they're setting up, again, they're rationalizing. This is just like The Day After Tomorrow. Remember, The Day After Tomorrow is a weather movie that talks us about how we're all going to be destroyed by storms, and it's all natural. It's a weather movie that sets us up for what's coming by making us believe that what's going to be done to us is an accident. It's kind of like telling somebody you think they look sick when you know you're poisoning them.
Mm.
If you're poisoning them and you're smart, you keep telling them they look sick so that they think they're getting sick. And, of course, what do you give them to get a well?
Yeah.
Right? Well, the fact that they're setting this thing up so assiduously to us indicates that New York, which, remember, is the key, one of the key cities for Bush, they enacted 9/11. That was a setup that couldn't have been done without the New York political establishment. The New York political and financial establishment that set up 9/11 would profit greatly from a hurricane in New York, which would simply be called, as Wolf Blitzer called Katrina last year, Hurricane 9/11.
Huh.
It's nothing but terror. It's weather terror. We believe that New York financial investors, and folks, I don't try to get on these shows to make friends, read that as global Zionism in large part.
Mm-hmm.
The Zionist financial community that happens to own New York, if y'all haven't heard that, that's true. We think they've invested up to the gills in the destruction of New York, and we think the destruction of a good part of New York is a high possibility this summer. It has nothing to do with, I don't have any crystal ball, but by the way, neither do that, do they? The next time you hear these weather forecasters telling you something that's going to happen a month or a week in advance, just remember how many times you got rained on your picnic because they couldn't call the weather 48 hours in advance. Now think about that. They can't tell you if it's going to rain on your picnic tomorrow, but they'll tell you a week in advance that a superstorm somewhere out there in the Antilles is going to wind up in your brother-in-law's eyeball. Now that's better than prediction.
Well, Captain, we're just about running out of time here.
Let's get to the last part. I do need to get the last one. New York and the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, right now, apropos of that, y'all need to start keeping a real close watch on your weather conditions presently. We noticed in the superstorm period of 2005, which you can again access through our operations Bono and Rita, we noticed that there was what we call megathermal conditions throughout the South. This whole last summer, there was an extremely hot period in the South. It came off the water, all the heat they were generating. If they're going to do one of these superstorms, they have to warm up the water current.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the currents where they're going to start the storm, but they have to warm up the water all the way to the target and including the target.
Mm-hmm.
It's like drawing in a line with energy.
And
the fact right now that you're having record highs in the Northeast, right? It's like 95, 100 degrees all the way up to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's freak weather, y'all. You start getting freak weather, you better start thinking.
And they were reporting in May that water temperatures off the mid-Atlantic coast were running 20 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit above normal, which is very significant.
That's impossible, and it can only mean one thing. There's an attack coming.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to be the officer who fails to convince you that the Japs are coming to Pearl Harbor, y'all. If I have to be emphatic to get it across, I'm going to tell it to you. They will kill you. You don't have 10, 15-degree ocean variants. And by the way, we saw it all last summer. If you're following that now, G.T. Gilbert, keep following it, because that's exactly what we saw last summer.
Yep.
They're creating super thermal energy in the ocean to generate these super storms. And in order to get that storm to go where they want, they have to send it along a courseway made up of megathermal, hyperheated water current, water going all the way up. So right now you have that 95 stuff, what's that, probably 15, 20 degrees above normal atmospheric conditions for New York, Boston, Philadelphia?
Right.
That means danger. The one other place that's, I think, under extreme danger is, again, the exact same area in Texas that's under danger from a petrochemical explosion, which is Houston, southeast coast, from the Louisiana border to the Mexican border, from Beaumont in the east, going through Texas City, down to Corpus Christi, and perhaps Brownsville. Remember, Bush doesn't care if he blows up a petrochemical facility like BP Texas City, British Petroleum, or ExxonMobil Beaumont. He doesn't care, he doesn't care if it gets blown up by a so-called terrorist or if it gets blown over by a so-called hurricane, which is really a weather weapon. He doesn't care, because either way, it means that his best buddies in the oil business get to charge whatever price they want for fuel.
And not to mention the military crackdown on the that would certainly follow in order to restore order to the areas that have been devastated. Captain May, we need to close out. We're right up against the clock here for the hour. In a nutshell, again, we're watching the continuity of government exercise in Washington, D.C. this week. We're looking at the dates that you mentioned coming up, 7-1 for the next shuttle launch, 8-28. And, of course, keeping an eye on the sky and on the ocean for possible uses of weather to once again put areas into the same sort of conditions we saw in New Orleans last summer, and we appreciate your insight, and especially coming as it is on today, Father's Day. Captain May of Ghost Troop, thank you once again for being our guest on PID Radio.
Well, thanks very much for having me, and this is Ghost Troop Captain May signing out for the Holy Horde from the belly of the beast in Houston, Texas.
And thank you for listening today to PID Radio. Do check out the show notes at PIDradio.com. For Sharon Gilbert, I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.